We're going to talk about Cuba. It is high up on a lot of people's travel bucket list. Is it on yours, Shruti?
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people seriously thinking about going this summer, which is why we want to let you have another listen to Brandy from The Business Breakfast. Now, she was on the ticket a couple of months ago. She was talking about her trip to Cuba. Guys, there are lessons to be learnt from this trip. Oh, yes, I'm there. I'm in Cuba right now.
Our hips are swivelling.
Oh, yes. So I think we've got to start, Brandy, with why Cuba?
Oh, do you know what? Because you can.
Because you can now. And you can quite cheaply, I believe.
You can quite easily and quite cheaply. Because since America has eased up on some of its restrictions against Cuba, flights have been flooding out, particularly out of Fort Lauderdale and Miami. Fort Lauderdale, yeah. Hollywood, they're working up to, I think, 126 a week is what they're aiming for to different cities in Cuba. So all of a sudden, it's gone from being somewhere that you had to sort of fly off to Mexico and then turn around and fly into Cuba to something that's 40 minutes away from Fort Lauderdale, yeah. Hollywood.
I mean, I used to sail out of Miami when I worked on cruise ships. That was our home port. And a lot of times, you know, we'd be cruising around the Caribbean and we'd actually pass Cuba, and it got this eerie kind of strange kind of feeling. And you could see that a lot of the passengers, you know, nudging each other and whispering, you know, that's it.
That's Cuba.
That's Cuba. You know, you could see it, but not get too close to it. You know, it was one of those places that you'd never imagine you'd be able to actually ever visit.
Tell us about the planning that went into this trip, Brandy. I'm imagining months and months of strategic plans of from this point to this point that I'm going to do this. How long did you spend planning this trip?
Do you know, and we're going to explain why this is not what you'd want to be doing if you were going to Cuba, I spent about half an afternoon a week before.
Half an afternoon.
Which is not how you do it, because I was going to Colombia. I was going to Florida anyway. I've got godchildren in Boca. I booked my flights to Florida and I thought, I've got an extra week in there. I'll go to Colombia. So I was planning all of that to Medellin. I was very excited. And then someone just said to me off the cuff, hey, why don't you go to Cuba? You know, Fidel's dead, might be interesting. And plans changed.
Mm. So how did we get there? Who did you fly with? And how, you know, how do we get there from here?
Okay, from here, I flew direct with Emirates to Fort Lauderdale because they now go direct, I think, 4 or 5 times a week. 14 hours odd for a flight, not bad. And then from there, I actually jumped on Spirit, but there's no shortage of options. JetBlue, which is Emirates' partner, goes there. Spirit is a very low-cost carrier. I've flown them before in and out of Mexico quite a bit, so I'm comfortable with them. United goes as well. So pretty much everyone these days who's flying out of the States has got a route, American airline-wise. So I flew with Spirit. They were really, really, really cheap.
It's funny, you know somebody's from New Zealand when they say a 14-hour flight. Oh, that's all right.
Not too bad, yeah.
Not for us, it's not. It's a long, long way.
I just booked a flight home. It was 19 hours. I went economy.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
I did.
That's amazing. I'm so proud of you. I thought you would have had contacts working on The Business Breakfast to get you bumped up a level. So what were you expecting of Cuba? Paint us a picture of what you hoped it would be like, Brandy.
Okay. What I knew of Cuba before I went, I knew quite a lot about the political history and the economics in terms of the socialism, in terms of the revolution and all the rest of it. I knew quite a bit from Malcolm Taylor, actually, who grew up in Barbados.
Yeah.
So he was filling me in. And other than that, it's kind of the picture postcard stuff that you have of the 1950s automobiles and all of the pastel coloured architecture
buildings,
and the houses. I think I must have just seen a lot of posters, really, more than anything else.
Mm. And did you think music as well? I mean, was that
of course
part of
Buena Vista Social Club?
Yeah, we just heard that.
A lot of the members from that original band are still playing in one of the hotels in Verano, so you can go and listen to them quite cheaply. I did. I thought music. I thought cigars.
Yeah.
As much as anything else, and other than that, I didn't really know.
All right, so you got there. Where had you been first? Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, I flew into Fort Lauderdale, and then I decided to turn around and fly directly there. Visas, by the way, are not an issue in the slightest, because there's not a Cuban embassy here in the UAE. But if you're just getting a tourist visa, you can buy them now, and do find out how much they cost, because it differs. It's $50 if you go with JetBlue, but they tend to be a slightly more expensive airline. Spirit's a lot cheaper. It's a real sort of no-frills airline, but theirs were $100 for the visa. But
would you buy them online?
No, you get them at the airport. So you turn
up,
they give you a form. You have to tick why you're going to Cuba, which is actually designed for Americans rather than anybody else, because they still have to say whether they're going for cultural reasons, for humanitarian reasons. There's about 10 options that they can pick. Strangely, tourism isn't one of them. But so you need to tick that, and you also need to buy compulsory health insurance when you're in Cuba, and that I think is about $30.
And how far away are we from Fort Lauderdale on flight-wise? To
45 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
That's nothing, is it?
Short one, yeah.
You're up, then you're down.
Yeah, we're going to find out more from Brandy on Cuba when we come back. And she's got some pretty harsh lessons that she learned about accommodation and how you pay for it.
Ticket tidbit.
Tidbit, a small and particularly interesting item of gossip or information.
And Shroots is on the tidbits today. What have you got for us in the 2 o'clock hour, Shroots?
Are you scared of turbulence?
You know, I used to be scared of turbulence, mm-hmm. but then I went on a fear of flying course with British Airways. I absolutely love turbulence now.
Well, that is exactly what I'm talking about today. Tips on how to deal with turbulence.
Okay.
So, Fearless Flight, that's a program. It was on US Today, a TV show. And they had the producer go through this flight simulator where they sit through turbulence and they gave her tips on how to deal with it.
That's never going to be as scary as actually doing it in the air, though, is it?
Yeah, because they throw everything at you in the simulator.
But you know you're in a simulator.
Yeah, but it's still scary.
Yeah, nah. You'd never have the fear in a simulator. Not unless you thought it was going to fall off it. If it was a high simulator, maybe.
I don't know. I think I'd be scared.
Would you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like being in a giant wheel or something.
Nah, I'm never scared in simulators.
Okay, well, we've got tips for you. One of them was that if you're stuck in turbulence, write down your name over and over again, but with the hand that you don't use. So if you're right-handed, use your left hand to write your name over and over again.
So it's all about taking your mind off what's actually happening elsewhere.
Exactly.
So it's making your brain focus on something else.
Exactly. So it diverts your focus, and it's also
a little bit like, you know, when you stub your toe.
Yeah.
And it hurts so much. You meant to pinch your arm really hard.
Yeah.
To make your brain divert from that pain to another.
Yeah. I used to watch House MD, and in that, you know, he's got this really terrible pain in his leg. Because he's off his meds. So he breaks his hand to sort of divert himself from it.
Not recommending that though, are we?
Nope, definitely not. And another tip from the captain was to breathe through a drinking straw. He says that the technique would restrict airflow and it would prevent hyperventilation.
Oh, that's a good one.
I know.
They taught me to do something which I've actually used in other high pressure situations. Now I'm not scared of turbulence anymore. They said it's really good if you do a breathing system where you breathe in for 8 and out for 4. In for 4 and out for 8. So you're constantly counting your breathing and regulating it.
So I guess it's all about distraction and just keeping yourself occupied.
Yeah.
Because I think there was research that turbulence is just going to get worse. So I think we should write all these down and, you know, be prepared, because thanks to climate change, there's going to be more turbulence. So maybe some leader of, you know, some 52 countries, state countries should take note and maybe think climate change is real for after all.
Oh, no. Lots more shaky planes in the air, I fear. Right. Cuba. If you are thinking of getting on a shaky plane there, it's high up on a lot of people's travel bucket list. A lot of people are seriously thinking about it this summer as well, getting there before it changes, because it inevitably will. And that's why we want to let you have another listen to Brandy from The Business Breakfast. She was on the ticket a couple of months ago, and she was talking about Cuba. Now, she had lessons to be learned there for us about booking and paying for accommodation, but also where to find the best music, and that actually was not too difficult.
I went and saw a lot of street bands that were playing, because literally, you can't walk through the middle of Old Town, particularly in Cuba, without seeing a four-piece salsa band in a restaurant or a bar somewhere.
Right. And it's all wafting out onto the street.
People are sort of dancing and chatting and drinking in the streets as well. It's lovely.
So there's lots of people doing salsas and doing merengues.
Not so much dancing. It's more just, it's a very hangout sort of culture.
Yeah?
It's a very hangout sort of culture.
So if you do not agree with Tahir there that it's more decrepit than romantic, where did it all go wrong? Because I know things did go slightly wrong, didn't they, on this trip?
So, do you know, I read Tahir's article, and we actually had quite, well, slightly similar experiences. I think the difference is that he gave up on day 2 and went home.
Did he? Oh, no. That's awful. I don't understand people who do that on a holiday. No.
Yeah, he was there for less than 48 hours,
so
I think.
So was that a mistake?
Yeah, because I powered through. But it did go, well, it depends on your definition of wrong. It certainly didn't go to plan because I didn't have enough
of a plan. And it was a loose plan to start with.
And that's why I did want to come on and talk to you guys, because what happened to me could easily be avoided. And as it was, what happened to me was actually a blessing in disguise, and I ended up with a far better holiday than I possibly could ever have planned anyway. Okay. So serendipity and all of that. But here's what happened. All of the guidebooks tell you to book months and months in advance, particularly in high season, which is now. They also tell you that if you have an American credit card, it won't work over there. Despite the fact that a lot of the economic sanctions are beginning to ease, American banking systems and American credit cards are still a problem. I sat here. I didn't really book it very far in advance, but I did find a hotel, the Hotel Sevilla, which is a really old, beautiful Moorish hotel. It's in the Graham Greene novel, Our Man in Havana, so it's historic, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
On the Paseo, beautiful. Booked it from here, thought I'd give myself a bit of a treat. But you can't pay via credit cards over the internet. They don't have the processing capability. So you have to pay while you're there.
Is it an expensive hotel?
I was paying around 700 dirhams a night. I'm quite a cheapskate when I'm travelling, so that for me was actually pushing the boat
out
a bit.
Yeah, that is expensive.
But I don't know. I'd had a couple of long weeks and I just thought I would do something nice for myself.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I had been told about the American credit cards and I thought, well, I'm fine. I live in Dubai. My bank's actually British. I've got some New Zealand cards as well. I didn't think I had anything to do with the American banking system. No worries. I took out what felt to me to be quite a stack of cash. Actually, I probably took about 3,000 or 4,000 dirhams with me, and I'm not used to walking around with cash anymore. Who is? And flew off. Got to the hotel, checked in, handed over my credit card, and they said, I'm really sorry. This is declined. So I handed over my next card, and then I handed over my next card, and then I handed over the only card I had left, and every single one of them was a
oh.
And I thought, oh dear, because I hadn't thought of any of them. They all apparently had some kind of American link somehow. So
this is my worst nightmare happening.
I phone my bank.
Right.
And my bank says, no, really sorry, sanctions. And I say, but you're British. And they say, yeah, no, still sanctions, sorry, nothing we can do. I was like, will my debit card work? Can I pull money out of the hole in the wall? They said, probably not. I went off to a place that's like the International Credit Card Centre that they sort this stuff out for you can, because obviously this happens.
And this is what you want to be doing on your holiday.
This is what you want to be doing on your holiday. They looked at all of my cards and they said, no, none of them are going to work. So,
according to my bra maths at this point, by the way, you've got about 6 nights worth of hotel stays if you spend nothing on anything else. So yes. How long were you there for?
7 nights.
Okay. Right.
And I eat.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I thought, fine, not a problem. I got hold of one of my New Zealand friends and my sister and said, can you send me your card details? Thank you. Because the hotel had said, we don't actually need the physical card as long as you've got, you know, the code on the back and all the rest of it. Put those in. All of those were declined, despite being very New Zealand banks, by the way, small New Zealand banks. Not only were they declined, my best friend's card got blocked for suspicious activity. So that's fine. So then we think, what can I do? I think I know I can Western Union some money in. So I try to sort that out. No, you have to be Cuban to get a Western Union, so that's fine. I find a Cuban. So I find a friendly Cuban. And I get
just randomly on the street or...?
No, he was an intern who was a student who was working in the hotel.
Okay.
Which is quite an ask, by the way, because to get Western Unions, you have to queue. You have to queue for pretty much everything.
Have you actually got a room
in Cuba?
Yet?
You've
got a room.
I have a room.
This isn't all a
And I've
front
paid
desk.
For the first 3 nights.
Right. Cash.
So, my friendly Cuban, I've taken all of his details. I get hold of my friend in Dubai. I say, can you send a Western Union to my Cuban, please? And I'll go with him and pick it up. Can you send a Western Union to Cuba from Dubai? No, you can't.
Oh, no.
He's phoning the embassy in Saudi Arabia, in Kuwait, because there's no embassy here. They're all saying no. The only way you can get a Western Union over is you send it from the States, and it's going to take a week, and you can send it from an American credit card, but it has to originate in America. And it just turns into this thing. So I think, I know, I'll book an Airbnb.
Great idea.
Because I'll use my card, but it won't matter. And there are Airbnbs in Cuba. Can you book an Airbnb from Cuba? What do you reckon?
I don't
guess
think so.
At this point, I'm thinking it's a no.
So I think that's fine. I'll get one of my friends in Dubai to book an Airbnb in Cuba.
Which is a brilliant idea.
Do you think you can book an Airbnb in Cuba from Dubai?
I'm going to say no.
So at that point, what I did was I went knocking on doors, because what you can do in Cuba is rent what they call casa particulares, which is people's rooms. It's how people earn hard currency.
So it's a bit like Airbnb without the internet.
It is. In a Which lot of 1970s styling.
Without the reviews as well, I'm guessing then, in that case.
Yes, and people literally have signs on their doors. So I'm knocking and knocking and knocking, and it's high season and everything booked out. And at that stage, I did get a little bit despondent.
Mark would have fainted by this point.
I'd have just been a quivering mass.
Yeah.
Have you got to the swimming pool yet, by the way? Or you've not even seen it in the hotel?
No. But I did meet, while I was doing all of this, I met an English guy who'd known a guy who'd come out and stayed, and he'd stayed with a woman who lived in the suburbs who was Cuban, and he hooked me up with her, and she and her entire street adopted me.
Oh.
She had a spare room, but only for one night. But her sister across the road had a spare room for 2 nights, and her neighbour had a spare room for 2 nights. So I literally just got passed around the neighbourhood, which was fabulous. I saved about 2,500 dirhams because it was $30 a night compared to the hotel.
But what was it like accommodation wise compared to the hotel?
Do you know, it was fine. I was staying, I mean, because they're renting out these rooms anyway. So
when you say fine, there's a lot of picky people in Dubai. I think I'm one of them.
If you're picky, it might not suit you. But there was air conditioning, there was a clean bed, there was a private bathroom.
What more do you need?
And what's more, I just got really involved. I had this entire street that was looking after me. There was a guy with a car who kind of was nominated as my driver.
What kind of car?
Oh, actually, it was quite boring. It wasn't one of the nice 1950s one. It was like sort of a little Mazda thing. But I'd pay him and he'd take me off wherever I wanted to go. I was walking people's kids to school.
Wow.
People were bringing around their neighbours and people that they felt that I should meet. They were cooking for me. They were recommending places that I should go. One of them took me down to see actually a boat that had been seized in a boatyard that people had tried to, about 30 people had tried to smuggle themselves off to Miami in. And they were stripping the boat of all of its bits and pieces because it was going to get crushed by the authorities. So I got to go down and sort of have a look at that and check it out.
This is so like, yeah. What would this be? If this would be like Underbelly in Cuba, I imagine. Like,
but it was fantastic.
Under the scenes to the dark side.
But this is how a lot of people do stay
you
in
saw
Cuba.
You saw the real Cuba, didn't you?
If you're on a budget. Because the Casa Particulares have been going on for a wee while. And if I was doing it again, or if I had been better organised in the first place, it's what I would have done. And as I said, I had a much, much better time and just saw so much more and met so many more interesting people because of what happened.
It sounds exciting, doesn't it, this trip? Stay with us, hear all about Brandy's move into the world of salsa when we come back. Also, we're going to be talking about food in Cuba and, of course, find out how much this trip cost. Brandy from The Business Breakfast, who we love on the ticket because she is a great traveller. She was on a couple of months ago and she was talking about her trip to Cuba, which does sound fantastic. However, there are lessons to be learned. Brandy ended up being adopted by a family in a neighbourhood called Vidado in Cuba when her cards wouldn't work and she couldn't stay in the beautiful hotel that she'd booked any longer because she'd run out of hard cash, you see. She had no money left. So she had to move into a casa particular, which is effectively someone's spare room.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. So let's talk about things to do in Cuba, apart from seeing stripped-down boats that people were trying to escape on, which is one of the things that was a highlight on your trip.
It was a highlight on my trip. Do you know, the best thing you can actually do, hands down, is just talk to people anyway, because they've grown up with such a different way of life from anything that you've ever experienced, that the best thing I did was get to know people and chat to people. But there is loads and loads of stuff to do. There's a massive sort of heritage preservation effort going on at the moment in the Old Town, which is a UNESCO heritage centre anyway, where they're not only doing up, you know, the big posh buildings, sort of the old palaces and all the rest of it, but they're doing up people's houses. To kind of bring them up to spec. And that's glorious. It's a really big walking place. You can walk pretty much the entire interior city. And it's safe too. It's very, very safe. I was walking home at sort of 9, 10 o'clock at night along the Malecon, which is the big 7-kilometre seawall. They call it the longest park bench in the world.
Yeah.
and it just runs for 7K along the sea. And people are sitting on it playing tubas. They're sitting on it gossiping. There'll be two people sort of perched on it playing chess. Windy days, you've got the sea coming right over. The only people jogging, by the way, are foreigners.
Yeah.
Honestly.
None of the locals are jogging.
No.
But that's brilliant as well. So it's a really easy place to navigate and to navigate on foot, although you can hire one of those 50s convertibles that you see in all the pictures of Havana for about $50 an hour. I met a really nice Spanish girl and we went off and did that together so that we could split the cost, which was fantastic. So we did a tour in a big convertible and got to know the guy who was showing us around as well. What else did I do? Do you know what I did do? When I didn't have enough money to pay for the hotel, and this is the advantage of socialism, I could go and get one of the best seats for the opera in one of the poshest opera houses, the Grand National Theatre that I've ever seen.
What did you see?
I went and saw Don Giovanni. Yeah. I ended up sitting next to the ambassador of Switzerland.
You're kidding me.
And what would it set you back?
$30.
As a normal person who just walked in off the street?
As a normal person who walked in off the street, I was 5 rows back. We're talking about sort of a 4-hour opera.
That's so cool.
$30.
Beautiful, beautiful opera house.
That's incredible.
$30.
What an experience.
What about photography? It sounds like a photographer's paradise to me.
Definitely. I'm rubbish. And I took some great photos because it's colourful. It's really colourful. Yeah. And it is one of those places that if you're the sort of person who likes to walk around and just explore and look at buildings particularly, the architecture is amazing because you've got all these old mansions that were effectively sort of taken over in the revolution. And just pottering is brilliant. I mean, I was walking along one day and I discovered the embassy of North Korea, and there aren't many of those around.
No.
and it's right next door to the British ambassador's residence, which I thought was interesting neighbours. And then you've got just a lot of buildings that have sort of turned into various offices of the revolution and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's really lovely. And, of course, if you like to dance, there is salsa.
Oh, yeah. And did you do a bit?
I did a little bit of freestyle.
Yeah.
I imagine it's quite intimidating.
Just wiggling around a little bit.
Yeah. Some of us are made to move and some of us are not.
And, yeah.
And some of us are made to eat and some of us are not. Let's talk about the food. were you guzzling the food?
No. The food.
Yeah,
Mark.
You don't guzzle it, do you? Yeah. Were you sampling some of the delicacies?
Ladies don't guzzle, do they, Brandy?
No, I've never guzzled in my life.
We nibble. That's
right.
What we do.
Nibbling the delicacies.
The food's interesting because there's been sanctions in Cuba for such a long time.
Yeah.
And a lot of the food, like if you see beef on the menu in a hotel, having spoken to some of the people who live there, they're not eating the beef. The tourists are eating the beef.
Oh, no. What's the beef? Is it like the beef that's in lasagnas from a famous supermarket in
England? No. One of their big dishes actually is pulled and long marinated beef, and it's wonderful. But you're just aware that there's quite a difference in what the local population is eating and what you're necessarily eating as a tourist. The national dish of Cuba is actually the cubano, which is effectively a ham and cheese sandwich with pickles.
Uh-huh.
But it's
so
good.
Eat a lot of that.
And if you walk into the supermarkets, I mean, you can see that there's just not choice. But what I did eat that was fantastic was I actually found the best restaurant in Cuba, which is called 304 O'Reilly, which is kind of a Mexican, Spanishy, Cuban blend. And they're literally just cooking with what they can get in the markets every day. So it's not particularly Mexican or it's not particularly Spanish, but it is very, very fresh. But the thing that really surprised me was that I wasn't snacking at all because there are no snacks and there is nowhere to buy snacks.
No.
Right, that's interesting.
There's no 7-Elevens or anything like
that. No, I don't think I saw a single person eating a bag of crisps or a chocolate bar, or indeed anywhere to purchase one. No, I did see some Snickers bars that were in a shop behind glass with a very, very, very long queue.
Really?
So what was everyone like? Did everyone look quite fit and healthy because of that?
Not everyone was fit and healthy, but there were probably more fit and healthy people than you would see here.
That's really interesting, isn't it? So are people mainly living on a plant-based diet there?
There's a lot of chicken eaten. There's quite a bit of fish and some other white meat.
Oh, it's so interesting. So that one restaurant, was that the only restaurant that you went to, or did you try lots of different ones?
I ate in a lot of local restaurants, and also in the same way that people rent out their spare rooms, a lot of people have also set up like sort of small restaurants inside their houses.
Oh, that's
so there'll
cool.
be sort of like three tables, and there's one dish of the day.
What would that cost you to eat there?
Oh, next to nothing, under $10.
Yeah.
Under $10. So you had 7 days to potter around Cuba. Was it enough, do you think, or would you need longer?
It was enough. I actually went outside of the city a little bit. I went to some other villages. I went to, because Hemingway used to live in Cuba, and there's a fishing village that he sort of used as inspiration. He used to hang out with the fishermen. So I travelled around a little bit. If I'd had a bit longer, because Cuba's hugely long, it's kind of shaped like an alligator, I would have gone probably either east or west
and
had a proper explore. Yeah, it is. It's really safe. I got chatting to one of the guys and sort of said, look, I'm walking home at night at 10 o'clock, am I fine? And he said, we are really safe for two reasons. Number one, there's no weapons. And number two, if you put two people in a room, one of them's probably a police informer. So we all tend to be quite well behaved.
Right. What about other tourists? Were there lots? We're hearing about this. It's going to absolutely go manic with tourism.
There were a lot of Americans. And getting chatting to some of them on the plane, they weren't quite sure what was going to happen when Trump came into power on the 20th. The general thought is that he won't be as liberal on Cuba, and there's a bit of a worry that he might roll back some of the advances that President Obama has made. So some of the Americans that I spoke to were like, we're going now because we don't know what's going to happen and this might be our chance. So there was a lot of tourists, but they're largely in the old town. And once you get outside of that, because of course I don't consider myself a tourist.
No, of course not. None of us do.
We're travellers.
We're not tourists.
We're travellers. You found yourself more amongst sort of the Cuban population.
And how did you feel the reception was for tourists in Cuba?
Really good. Really good. It's bringing in hard currency. It gives people a chance to earn some money outside of the sort of the standard government wage, which is $30 a month. So people are exceptionally happy.
So everybody gets that $30, right?
Roughly, yeah. I mean, whether you're a lawyer or whether you're a teacher, if you're in sort of an official job, that's what you get. But people are supplementing it by, you know, driving cars, yeah, renting out rooms. What has been the real change in Cuba is being able to have private business for the first time. And this is what's really new. And people are saying this has been the biggest change for them. Hairdressers, yeah, mechanics, yeah, things like that. That's all new.
So if you were to hire a car, is that quite easy to do that over there, to take your license along?
If you book it in advance, and okay, if you have a working credit card, yeah, neither of which I had done. Yeah. Yes. And do you know what? I would as well, because you get that thing in your head where you think, oh, the roads might be a bit chaotic, I wouldn't know. The roads were actually looked quite quiet, quite safe. The only thing is there's not an awful lot of petrol stations, so you do have to be very, very good about making sure your tank's full every time you see one, and you're also not going to be relying on GPS because there's not internet.
I wonder where you have to be from to have a working credit card then, because we've ticked New Zealand off the list. English banks ticked off the list. Dubai banks ticked off the list.
I think a lot of the Europeans work and the Canadians work, because there were a lot of French. I met a lot of Dutch. I met a lot of Scandinavians and a lot of Canadians as well.
A week in Cuba, how much did it cost you in total then? Have you worked it out?
Yeah, I did some sums. I mean, the biggest expense was, funny enough, actually flying into Fort Lauderdale to start with from here, which I bought the flights there on sale. It was about sort of 3,500 dirhams. It cost me another 800 dirhams to get into Cuba with flights and visas and bags and everything, because I went low cost. I ended up spending about 2,500 dirhams on accommodation in the end. And I probably spent about another 2,000 dirhams while I was there. But by the end of it, to be honest, I was overpaying people for stuff. The people who were driving me around and the people who were feeding me, I was paying just a little bit more than they asked for, because I kind of had capitalist guilt, I think, by that stage.
That's still not a lot of money, is it, to tick off a bucket list location like Cuba?
No, it's not, is it?
It isn't.
I mean, so would you recommend it? Should we go?
I would recommend it. I would say to anyone who wants to go, plan it in advance, book your accommodation in advance, take a stack of cash and take more than you need. I certainly didn't feel unsafe having cash. And also take stuff that you want to get rid of. I ended up giving away a load of my clothes. I gave away all my shoes. I gave away all of my godchildren's Christmas presents, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I just kept meeting people who didn't have this stuff and didn't have an option to buy it, regardless. Mm. So I left with a much lighter bag.
Hang on a minute. Isn't that the reason people are going to Cuba? Because all that stuff isn't there yet? And look
maybe
at you, taking it in. Taking it
I
in
gave
and leaving
away
it there.
Loads of my toiletries. If I went back, actually.
Would you go back?
Yes, I would go back and go out of Havana and visit some other bits. But I would take not only cash, but I would stock up on toiletries before I left. And I would take them to give to the people that I was staying with.
And just quickly, who is it for? Is it for families as well as young people, singles and couples?
You could take kids. I think it's probably more a singles and couples destination, but you could certainly take kids. You'd be okay.
Brandy Scott, thank you so much for sticking around and coming in to tell us all about Cuba. It sounds fantastic.
Mm. No worries.
Renette's been on, 4001, says, I've been to Cuba. It is amazing. We're going to hear from her when we come back. Also, Hisham texted through and said, that was the same in Madagascar, Brandy, outside the capital. No grocery stores where you can pop in to buy some snacks. You've got to take your own. He went on to say, Madagascar and Cuba were always on my list. I went to Madagascar last month. Oh, I'm dying to go there. And hopefully Cuba by the end of this year. He says, thank you for replaying that segment from Brandy. Very amusing, but I like her. We all like Brandy Scott. Who doesn't?